Okay. And do I have everything? I do. Good. Okay, why is this case number 53? 53 is the port number for DNS. Very good, very good, very good. I'm not as smart as Marcus. Marcus brings candy. I would throw candy, but I don't. I didn't bring candy. So anyway, so the big thing about DNS is that pretty much if DNS stops working, everything stops working. If you can't get to Facebook, which is a crisis, right, then that would mean that, that possibly that DNS isn't working on one side or another, okay? Same thing for Active Directory. I am going to be talking about the most basic of basic things in DNS, and yet it will provide you with the infrastructure, the basis that you need to be able to attack any DNS problem. I have talked about DNS for days, so this is what I can do in 75 minutes. My plan is going to be we're going to talk about how DNS works. We're going to start from some incredibly basic stuff for a few minutes. We're going to do a very simple query, and then we're going to analyze it. And we're going to find that one very simple query extends to looking after the most complicated ones. I'm going to convince you that there's some great tools out there. Two free ones off the top of my head are Network Monitor, and the other one's called Dig. Now, everybody's heard of Network Monitor, right? How many of you have big, come on, what is this, everybody, none of you? Like, it's really hot here, we're kind of sweaty, I don't want to put my arm up, that might be a nice thing. Anyway, so how many of you use NetMon? Really? Oh, okay, wow. Usually the question is, how many of you tried NetMon once, looked at it and said, eek, and then closed it down and said, not doing that again? Sorry. Okay, well, good, this will be an easier sell than it normally is then. We're going to do some NetMon. We're going to resolve a DNS address, and I'm going to then say to you that there's lots of ways to approach troubleshooting. One of the ways I do, because I'm not that smart, is that if I can understand how something works, then I can understand how it does not work. I'm going to argue, let's see how healthy DNS works, and if you know what healthy looks like, it's easy to see what not so healthy looks like. So that's my plan. We're going to do reviews and queries. We're going to look at the insides of packets. Once we've taken the basic stuff, I'm going to take you down to the bare metal in a DNS packet. It's pretty easy, as it turns out. We're going to learn DNS details. We're going to learn about QA. There's one Q and three A's. There's one Q and three A's in every DNS query. Then we'll look at eDNS. Now, there's a thing that came to us with Server 2008 R2 called extensions to DNS. And there's a lot of hooey out there on the internet about how eDNS is a bad thing. That's wrong. eDNS is cool, and I'm going to equip you with the data that you need to whisk away that nonsense. Also, I'll be demonstrating a few things, and I'm always a little troubled by seeing some of these talks where people have one slide and they say, I'm just going to demonstrate. And I'm not talking about Marcus because he gives his notes out afterwards, but I'm saying a lot of folks just demo for 75 minutes, and I walk away saying, gosh, you're really smart. I couldn't do any of those things. So anything I'm doing here is pretty much step-by-steps in this PowerPoint, okay? So let's start off by looking at DNS logs. Do you know that the DNS, I'm feeling caged because normally I'd be walking amongst you, but I don't know if there's enough light for me to do that. I may not be able to control myself, but I should try to stay up here. Anyway, so if you are working with let me ask you the question. How many of you are full-time DNS administrators? That's all you do? Really? Wow. I usually don't get any hands in that either. Okay. Well, okay, congratulations. But I think for most of us, it's something we have to do now and then. Right? And it's always one of those situations where people are screaming and that sort of thing. The other beautiful thing about Network Monitor as a troubleshooting tool, you fire that sucker up and stick it on the 6-foot screen and the users leave. I mean, how many of you, I'm resequencing DNA. That's pretty much, you can tell them that and it looks like that, How many of you get to troubleshoot in a relaxed, calm, supportive environment? So if you can get rid of the people that are yelling at you, it's one thing to do. So on the DNS server, you can, I did it, see, you can go to DNS, right-click a server, and there's going to be a bunch of tabs. And one of the tabs is called logging. You know the one I'm talking about? Have you clicked that? It's got like 64 checkboxes on it. You know the one I'm talking about? A lot of stuff there. Let's take a look at one of those guys. This looks like this is going to be really useful because it's got hex. Anything with hex is going to be useful. And what do we got here? Let's see. Xook and 5 Yahoos with a 3.0. Who won? I'm not sure. And we got a little more of that. MX, I know that. That's email. I get a lot of that. Oh, Kook. Okay, all right. And then more Kook. Huh? Now, a lot of people are going to say this isn't terribly clear. For how many of you is this clear? Seriously. Come on, tell the truth. It's okay, because if you're a DNS, real geek or geekina, then, you know, you're going to get this. If you are, I might be wasting your time. The point is, this will make a lot of sense once we break apart some DNS packets. So, we're going to start off with, get started, everybody on the same playing field. I'm going to ask you something super simple that you think you know the answer to, and you probably do know the answer to. But then we're going to take it a little further. So, let's say that I have a PC, and my PC wants to resolve an address, a.bigfirm.com. a.bigfirm.com is a very important address. I created that. I know my examples are supposed to be contozo.com. To me, contozo sounds like a disease. What's that you got on your wrist there? I got a little contozo. I put some lotion on it. It's just a... As an Italian-American, it sounds like a vague anti-Italian slur. Anyway, so what I did was I thought it'd be cool to have a really neat domain, like a big company would have, because I'm not. And so I registered bigfirm.com, and I use that in my examples. And you can use that in yours, too, because I know a lot of people get upset if you use their names in. A.bigfirm.com, that's a special thing that I built. That is a record that, if you resolve it, will blow up some of your NS lookups. And that will tell you something that I'll be telling you about, okay? So we're going to resolve that. And let's say that we have a machine called PC1, and PC1 wants to look up the IP address of a.bigfirm.com. We're going to see how many queries happen, what's inside each query, and then how we can break that out and take it a step further. How does the DNS hierarchy work? Well, if we're going to be searching for the answer to a.bigfirm.com, then some DNS server is going to have to search the internet, and you know this. Of course, the DNS hierarchy is built, and right up top in that DNS tree, it's called the root, unless you're from certain parts of the country, in which case it's the rut. But it's not spelled. Gosh, Meyer were like, that ain't funny. That wasn't funny at all. So anyway, and root is spelled period. This is a tree that was built by a geek. How do I know that? Because only geeks draw trees where the roots are in the air. So anyway, so it's true. Up here we got the top-level domains, so-called TLDs. Who creates those? The Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. I can. Given how badly they've muffed some of this stuff, I can't would be a better name for them. But so they came up with these originally. They add them now and then. Remember .arrow, .museum, .biz came out, what, about 8 years ago? That was real successful. Did you hear that you can build your own now? You can now make it. If you wanted your website not to be www.acme.com, you could just be www.acme. You could make Acme a top-level domain. It'll cost only $185,000. Seriously. Plus annual maintenance fees. You know. So if you've made it big, you got a pile of money, and you're not into cars, so the Ferrari's not going to be the answer, just get yourself a top-level domain. Okay. Anyway, and then from there, the second levels, those are things like Microsoft.com or Manasseh.com or something like that, or, you know, DOJ.gov, something like that. Once we get those domains, and by the way, I'm going to use another phrase too, not just domain. The other phrase I'm going to use is zone. When I say there's a Manasseh.com domain, that's a little ambiguous, isn't it? Because is that an Active Directory domain or is that a DNS domain? DNS domains have been around since 1984. Active Directory domains have only been around since 2000. Because of the way that Bind, which is the most popular DNS server in the world, created by the ISC.org guys, well, there's terminology where the files that store information about a domain, about acme.com or manasseh.com or microsoft.com, are called zone files. And so a lot of folks would not necessarily say that that's the manasseh.com DNS domain. They call it the zone. So I'll talk about zones as well. Technically, there's a small difference between zones and domains, but don't worry about it at the moment. Once you've got one of those domains, you can break it down further. You can make these. So for example, I got a couple of locations. I'm in Virginia and North Carolina, and Virginia is the Manasseh.com global headquarters as opposed to the North Carolina place. And so if I create a subdomain, hq.manasseh.com, this is an interesting question. I get this question a lot. What's the right phrase for it? Is it a third-level domain? Is it a subdomain? Is it a child domain? What do you guys think? How many of you say this is a third-level domain? These are all reasonable answers, okay? How many of you say it's a subdomain? That's the right word for it. A lot of you go for that. How many go for child domain? Okay. How about the consultant's answer? It depends. And then there's always the other acceptable answer, which is I don't know, ugly former fat man. You asked me, that's what we hired you for. So, okay, ignorance is fine. Okay, anyway, the answer is I went out and I got all the DNS RFCs. I downloaded them and I did a text search to find out third level domain, child domain, and subdomain. And here's what it came out. It's about 50% subdomain, 50% child domain, so the IETF guys, they don't know either. If you want to have a domain, the VeriSign folks who do com, the VeriSign folks would like you to have two DNS servers at least. One DNS server, I want to clarify this, you probably know it, but I'll say it anyway, can host more than one zone. For example, I'm one of those people that owns like 20 domains in the hopes of getting rich with them, not getting rich in the sense of selling them, but getting rich in the sense of, well, this is a great name, I'm just going to hold on to this until I get around to doing something with it, which I haven't done. But anyway, I've got one server that handles all those guys, so that's a quite doable thing. Which reminds me, by the way, so PC1, that's my story, PC1 is looking up a.bigfirm.com. In order for it to do that, PC1 needs to have, in order for that to happen, PC1, I'm trying to keep myself on schedule here, so I want to know where I'm supposed to be. I'm good, I'm in good shape. PC1 needs to find a DNS server. Whenever you use DNS, where do you get your DNS servers from? Either statically configured, somebody goes in and punches it in, or where do we get it from most of the times? DHCP, exactly. Okay, good. Let me turn around and ask you another question about DNS configuration, since you guys did very well on that, by the way. And by the way, I said you guys in the 2012 ladies and gentlemen sense. I realize that it's a tech ed. There are lines at the men's bathroom. That's just not right. That is just not right. No, that's not the worst part. The worst part is the women wetting themselves, giggling. Look at that. Anyway, what was I talking about? I don't remember. Anyway, so in terms of setting, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't want to, you know, piss off the two unconfirmed sightings of women in the building. So that's just this is a dev show. There's more women at dev shows. Why is that? I don't know what that means. Anyway, so now that I've gotten myself in trouble with everybody in the room, so right, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, if you're setting up a DNS server, okay. So let me ask, how many of you have your own DNS server? I'm going to give you the simplest example possible. So you're not even in the office, you're at home. You're on your computer. Where did your computer get a DNS server from at home? How many of you have a DNS server at home? I know you're out there, my people. Yes, my people. Speak. Anyway, for most of us, what are we going to do? It's the ISP's DNS server that the $40 Linksys router knows about and hands it along, right? Does that sound about right? Or OpenDNS, there's no perfectly good answer. Sometimes you get trouble with the ISP's DNS server. When I'm in North Carolina, my ISP is Charter. Shouldn't have said the name. Charter. Anybody here from Charter? Charter Communications? No? Let's talk about them. Because they have the best tech support guys, I tell you. Sometimes I'm trying to ping something on the internet, or I can't get somewhere, and I can't get anywhere. I'm thinking, oh my God, the internet's down. But I have a backup plan that I'll bet a lot of you have. How many of you have the IP address of a well-known DNS server on the internet memorized? Yeah, it's like, I love all of you. Would you come live with me? Like, no one, I live in the middle of nowhere. None of my neighbors understand any of this stuff. Seriously, I have a block, a /64 block of IPv6 addresses. I have 18 quintillion static IPv6 addresses that are routable. No one else has. No one within 50 miles cares. No one. I've been largely single for almost a year and a half, and that has not got me one date. You know, it's just, you got 18 quintillion. What? He's lying. Anyway, so let's say you want to set up your own DNS server. I'll start to tell you about Charter. So I'll ping 4.2.2.2. That's the GE DNS server that's been up since the beginning of time. I see heads nodding. So I called up the Charter guys. I said, you know, your DNS server's not working. They said, well, you know, sir, once the bits leave our ISP, they're out onto the internet, and then it's all the phone company's job. It's one of those moments that you're like, I'm trying to get some help here, but I'm going to have some fun. The phone company? Really? Can I quote you? So, So it's a backup plan. Let's say you have a virtual machine. How many of you have a Hyper-V box or an ESX box at home? Come on, sorry. Okay, good. So you spin up an extra virtual machine. Just follow with me on this. You spin up a virtual machine. You put a naked copy of Server 2008 R2. You don't configure it at all. You go with that incredibly sexy automatic name that comes up with it. It gets some IP address, like the one I got here. Gets some IP address off your router. The only change, besides turning it on, the only change is that I've turned on the DNS role. So I want to make sure everybody, just in case somebody's sleeping, I just want to make sure that everybody's with me on this, okay? Naked R2 box just came out of setup. You know, Panther just spit it out. Got the DNS role installed. I figured out what its DHCP IP address is, and I point my workstation at it. I want to ping a.bigfrim.com. That's all I did. How many of you say that's enough configuration? Okay. How many say, no, you got to do some more configuration? Oh, how many of you are cowards? Let's say this again. Turn server on, put DNS on it, point the machine at it. It's connected to the internet, of course. How many think it can resolve a name without any more work? How many think it can? It takes more configuration. And you call yourselves DNS administrators. Well, anyway, okay. Okay, cowards, how many of you wouldn't raise your hand no matter what I said? Okay, the answer is it will. The answer is it will. And why is it that an unconfigured DNS server can still search the internet? Because what's the name of that file? Root hints, exactly, root hints. Okay, so the reason I do that is I get asked this question a lot. People want to set up an AD in their house or something like that just to play with it. They want to know how much configuration they got to do. That's it, that's all you got to do. And who's going to ask the question? Somebody always asks the question. Why is the IP address in my house at 10 address? Oh, here? Maybe you guys, with all the DNS administrators, with all the Netmon people. How many of you got 10 addresses at home? That's what I thought. So, for me, it's really part of a plan, you know? I told you that I'm looking for the right person, and I'm thinking that by the time we get to that third date, you know, the one where you could invite her over to cook? Because all geeks do cook, C-O-O-K. No, you do this, because, like, check me on this. All geeks do at least one of the following three things. Ready? Cooking, photography, music. Did I get everybody? You know how I know? These things involve the same three things. You have to learn a bunch of new concepts, which we are good at. You know, we can pat ourselves on the back. How many of you are in your 40s or 50s? Let me ask, or more. Okay. Most people who are, I'm 54. Most people who are in their 40s or 50s haven't learned anything new in 20 years, because they don't have to. They're in the same job. In the IT business, you can't do that. It's great. Keeps our brains alive. So that's cool. We're used to that. New concepts. Second is you got to buy some toys. We're all over that. You can't do good cooking if you don't have lots of pots and stuff like that. Photography, man, you can spend so much money on a camera. And music, forget about it. How much does a guitar cost? You know? Oh, and the third thing is that doesn't at all. There's the art. Doesn't matter how much stuff you buy. Doesn't matter how many things you learn. It's the little piece you can't get yet. You know? So I'm a photography and a cooking guy. So I figured she'd be over, third date, you know, and while I'm cooking, she'd turn her laptop on, because she'd be that kind of person. She'd bring a laptop with her, because, seriously. If you're not technical, you don't get any of my jokes, you know, so. You just gotta say, huh, what, is he still talking? You know, so. And she would notice that she got not one, but two routable IPv6 addresses. Now that would impress her. And I would explain, none of my neighbors get that. We would laugh, ha ha, have a little moment, you know, shared moment. We're like, laugh about the same stuff. It's working, you know? And then when she sees the 10 address, that's it. Game over. You know, so. You don't think it's going to work? All right. Well, anyway. So recursion DNS queries. So the first thing is that PC1 finds its DNS server, and it gets it. It's either configured with static or DHCP. And let's say that the ISP's DNS server is unimaginably called ISP DNS. So PC1 asks ISP DNS to look up the IP address of a.bigfrim.com. How does it do that? I never believed this when I first learned DNS about 20 years ago, but every DNS server is incredibly thick-headed. If it wants to look up a.bigfrim.com, it actually goes to the root servers and said, would you do this for me? I just find that astounding. I mean, how many machines are on the internet? I don't know either, but I mean, if you told me there were 3 billion machines on the internet, I'd believe that. I mean, isn't that a reasonable guess, I would say? Anyway, and there's only how many root servers? 13. 13 root servers are delivering that kind of quality to an entire planet. What other planetary network can you actually say we have? You know, the internet's just kind of islands, man. What does the internet agree on? Everybody on the internet agrees on DNS. So it's some pretty cool stuff. Anyway, so PC1, the ISP DNS says, would you go look up a.bigfirm.com for me since you have nothing else to do? There's not really 13, by the way. We're going to see it in just a little bit. But the root servers are a little busy. So they essentially send, in DNS, there's a way in DNS to say, look, talk to the hand, buddy. And in DNS language, you can say, talk to the hand, I have an idea, why don't you ask the COM server since COM is closer to a.bigfirm.com than the root is. Make sense? So, we also give, you know, the root servers also hand out the names of the 13 DNS top level, let's say that again. How many root servers we got? How many root servers again? 13. And then how many COM servers did I say we have? 13. What's going on here? Is it just that we're like scientists? You know, the IETF guys, that they're scientists? And they're saying, we don't fear 13. We don't suffer from trichinexophobia. Is that what they're saying? Stay tuned. So, at this point, ISP DNS server then goes to those .com servers and it says, hey, would you go look up a.bigfirm.com for me? Because there's only 13 of you, and it's not like people search .com all that terribly often, right? Do you know that the .com DNS servers are some of the biggest servers on the planet? They're these huge Oracle cluster things. And how many .com domains are there now? 101.9 million last night. I looked it up for you. That's what I do for you. So, the .com, I have no life, that's why. So, the .com DNS servers say, look, we're not doing your job for you. I have an idea. Why don't you, since it's a.bigfirm.com, why don't you go to the DNS servers for a.bigfirm.com? Now, I don't have 13 of those because I'm not imagining I'll have the kind of traffic to look up a.bigfirm.com that, you know, might see otherwise. So that's one of the DNS servers for a.bigfirm.com. Is everybody with me so far? Okay. Web2.manasseh.com actually has the zone file. It actually knows the answer to the question, and so it gives the answer. And now the ISP DNS server can give the answer. Does that make sense? Talk to me if not. Yes, please. Great question. So when the root server, it's good to have a shill in the audience. Have we ever met before, sir?
I don't think so.
You're about like seven slides too early, but that's very, very, very well done. Yep. So if I'm asking a question of the root servers and the root servers are saying, talk to the hand, go talk to the .com servers, it not only gives them the 13 names, but the 13 IP addresses as well. Just to save a little trouble. Okay? So now ISP DNS server can answer PC1. Is this making sense so far? All right. This gives me a chance to review a phrase, authoritative. If you ask the root servers about a.bigfirm.com, they don't know the answer. They could look it up, but they don't want to. If you ask the COM servers about a.bigfirm.com, they don't know the answer. They could look it up. They don't want to. Bigfirm.com does, though. It has the file right on the hard drive. It is said to be authoritative. Okay? Authoritative means I know. Why am I making that point? If the first person, let's say that a whole bunch of people from class here all live in the same county, and the first one of you pings a.bigfirm.com, what's the ISP DNS server going to do the second time? It's going to take it out of cache. Excellent. So it remembers questions. Let's talk about that. So it remembers that somebody asked for a.bigfirm.com, and that way if the question comes back, it doesn't have to look it up. That makes sense? But how long does it remember? Something called, very good, the TTL, time to live. If I'm the Manasseh.com DNS server, and I respond a.bigfirm.com, I also say, that's good for 12 hours, 1 hour a day. Thus, if an ISP DNS server asks that question, it won't have to ask again for a day. Does that make sense? What is a typical TTL on the internet? Anywhere, but it's in the range of like an hour to 24 hours, right? All right, let's get back to Active Directory because that's why a lot of you are here. What's the TTL on an Active Directory record? It does depend. There are two numbers, but they're very close. No. An Active Directory record, an SRV record stored that your systems use to find domain controllers. Okay, I'll take the suspense away. 15 minutes for some of the records, 20 minutes for some. What does that mean? Your DNS servers for Active Directory aren't doing a lot of caching, are they? Which means your DNS servers are doing a lot of looking up over and over and over again, which is why understanding this stuff is so very important when it comes to troubleshooting. How many queries? I count 8. Let's take it down another level. Every one of those, is everybody good so far? Are there any questions? All right. Good. If I look at any of those packets, whenever one DNS server is asking another DNS server something, remember that we talk a lot about client-server computing. Some basic things we know about client-server computing. Who starts the conversation, the client or the server? It's always the client. If the ISP's DNS server, which is a DNS server, is talking to the DNS root server, which is a server, who's acting as a client? The ISP DNS server is stepping out of its magisterial server-like role to become a mere peon for just a little bit. It directs a question at what port to the root servers? Port 53. Okay, good. However, if I'm a lowly ISP server talking to the root servers, and it only does it because they want to tell their friends, I talked to the root today. I'd be excited, wouldn't you? They say, I'm talking to you on 53. Talk back to me on, and they roll the dice and they come up with what's called an ephemeral port. An ephemeral port between 1,024 and 65,535. That should ring a bell. All of you should have heard that probably at some point, because pretty much all internet conversations go like that. Hi there, server. I'm talking to you on your well-known port. If you're a web server, I'm talking to you on 80 or 443. If you're a DNS server, I'm talking to you on 53, et cetera. Talk back to me on 19,221. Why? Because if I'm the ISP DNS server, I've got probably hundreds of outstanding questions and hundreds of answers coming in at any moment in time. I've got to be able to match them up right. The other way that we do it is that inside your DNS packet, there is a thing called the TXID, which is short for transaction ID. Now, Netmon's not going to call it that. Netmon is going to call it, I forget, we'll see, packet ID or something like that. But TXID is the abbreviation that we'll see. So I talk to the DNS server on 53, the answer comes back on an ephemeral port, high port, and the transaction ID is also a 16-bit number. So it ranges from 0 to 65,535. These are supposed to be random, supposed to be random. Let's look at a little picture just to kind of cement that from a cartoon point of view. How many of you have seen me do a presentation before? Some of you? Oh, a lot of you. So you know that I suck at PowerPoint animation, just so we're clear. Me doing PowerPoint animations is like a blind man doing a Rembrandt, you know. So there's ISP DNS server, and there's web2.manassi.com. ISP DNS server says, hey, port 53. What's the IP address of a.bigfrom.com? Do an A lookup for me, address lookup. Send the answer back to me at port 3351 with a transaction ID of 279 when you do. If those things don't match up, this guy won't listen. Notice the server's got his ears on now. The server is waiting for the answer. The client, in this case, sorry. The client is waiting, which is a DNS server, is waiting for the answer. It will wait until it gets an answer, and it will stop listening at that point. This is how DNS spoofing goes on. Was anybody here at the Tech Ed New Orleans? Tech Ed New Orleans, I did a talk about, not many of you, okay. I did a talk about how DNSSEC works. The idea is that if a bad guy, not the real server, if a bad guy jumps in here and stuffs a bogus answer in there, this ISP is now sending people to the wrong place for a.bigfrom.com for a day, something like that. It's called cache poisoning or DNS spoofing, and it's what DNSSEC is here to solve. The only thing I'm going to say about 2012 DNS, because it doesn't do anything with DNS, essentially, 2012 DNS makes signing your DNS zones a whole lot better. If you want to learn more about that, if you Bing Manassi, I'm always getting my ass in trouble because, no, seriously, I got to give these guys the PowerPoint beforehand, and if I say Google this, they say, Google, what's that? I'll change it to Bing, you know, I'll say, so Bing this, and if you don't get the answer, then Google, you know, and so if you Bing, I love that phrase, Bing. I love all the stories about what it means. My favorite, and it's probably not true, is Bing stands for because it's not Google. That's, I don't know if it's true, but I love it. I want it to be true. Anyway, so if you Google Manassi, New Orleans, Tech Ed, DNSSEC, it's really technical. Take it about 5 minutes at a time with sips of something, you know, mood altering in between. But there's a lot of stuff there. I got all stuffed into 75 minutes, and so that could be helpful. Anyway, so the answer comes back, and it comes back on the correct port, the correct transaction ID. This is not security. This was never supposed to be security. It was just bookkeeping. So we're going to see transaction IDs. We're going to see ephemeral ports. Are we good on that? Let's keep going. We're also going to find, this is something that you know. You know that, it's killing me not walking amongst you guys, but I know there's no light, you wouldn't be able to see me. But anyway, so you know that anything, just about everything over the internet either runs atop TCP or UDP. You probably remember that. If nothing else, you learned it Network 101, however many zillions of years ago. There's TCP and there's UDP. What are the differences? Well, when I talk about UDP, I think it's a law that I have to compare it to a message in a bottle. Because the idea with UDP is that machine one talks to machine two and never says, did you get it? Machine two is never polite and says, oh, I so enjoyed that information, and while we're at it, let me tell you about what's happening with me. That never happens. So it's kind of like a message in a bottle, but it's really not, because the percentage of actual received transmissions from messages in the bottles to the correct receiver are pretty small, whereas UDP is pretty good. And then there's TCP. What does TCP do? So TCP builds a conversation. So the whole idea is that, what's that conversation give me? It means if we block the data up into pieces and we can send it out of order, the other end will put it back together. If there are any problems with any of the pieces, they'll be retransmitted. All good stuff. You've heard this before. It's a conversation. And what's the word for the phrase that gets it going? If you want to sound technical about any kind of internet thing with TCP, you just say, well, it all starts out when the three-way... You don't know this? It's the three-way handshake. I want to talk to you. I'm the client. I send you a message as I want to talk to you. The message is SYN. S-Y-N, not S-I-N. And only in Vegas is it S-I-N. And so SYN, and you say, sure, you can talk to me. And the way you do is you send me back ACK. But you realize all you've done is agreed to have me talk to you, which, trust me, you don't want to be on a one-sided conversation with me. So you say, while we're at it, you send me a what? SYN. And I send you back an ACK. So it's SYN, ACK, SYN, ACK. Okay? I've tried this to establish communication, start conversations with humans. Like, again, try women. You say SYN, I say ACK. It hasn't worked. It's been a bad year. But anyway. So seriously, the reason I told you that story is that which one's better, TCP or UDP? Well, you want to say TCP, but not always. Let me give you an example of TCP versus UDP. So I'm originally from New York, which is why I talk this fast. And I live now in the middle of nowhere, right around the H in southeastern Virginia. And when I was in New York, I liked that because they had diners all night long. And if you want, I'm an early riser. If I'm up at 5:15, I could just, in New York, I could go down to the diner and get some breakfast. Well, there's a nice place called Eddie's in Virginia Beach that opens at 6, and that's good enough. So I go there, and walking into Eddie's is like walking into any restaurant. It's a little dance we do. I walk in, and even though I can see an empty table there, I'm supposed to wait until I'm shown to the table, because who knows, there might be mines, alligators. And so I sit down, the server gets my drink order and comes back with a menu. I then think about what I want. I figure out what I want. It's probably the same thing I order every day. And I use the universal sign of close the menu, put it on the table. At this point, the server comes over and says, what do you want? Takes my order. I get the order pretty quickly. I begin to eat it. Server waits until my mouth is full and says, how is it? Eventually, I get a check, which is the standard American way of saying, get the hell out. Okay. I then pay, and I'm gone. Okay? Right? Not every restaurant's like that. How many of you spent some time where I grew up, in New York? In a particular place, the borough of Manhattan. Anybody been to Midtown Manhattan? Okay. It's breakfast time. You could go to a sit-down place. Man, you just walk down one of the great avenues of Manhattan. And you'll see all these little bagel places. They're about the size of this stage, maybe half the size of this stage. And these guys sell 10 billion bagels between 5 a.m. and 10 a.m. in the morning. The way it works is you walk in, and there's just a guy behind the counter. This is a gentleman who just recently entered the country. No disrespect. His English is a way better than my Arabic. So, you know, respect. Respect. He might say yes. You say something like, I don't know, sesame bagel with chive cream cheese toasted. And then you're supposed to walk over here and pay for it. Because the guy just sort of passes the whatever, or, you know, there's a message. The secret language of bees is spoken behind the counter. And that's it. And if you're waiting for normal stuff, and you say it again, he'll say, you want two? And you know what? You go over there and you pay for it, and it's waiting for you. And you know how many times they drop the ball there? I've never seen it. This is a UDP-based restaurant, not a TCP-based restaurant. Am I right? Am I wrong? Right? Right? Why do the bagel places in Manhattan, which do a great job, why do they do UDP? They're not making that much money on every bagel. Rent in Manhattan is expensive. And there's 50 guys waiting to take that space up because they think they're going to get rich with a bagel place in Manhattan. So UDP, less overhead. DNS is one of the few protocols I've ever heard of that will run on TCP or UDP. However, DNS prefers to be on UDP because early RFCs, 1984 RFCs, RFC 883, 1035, specify a few things. First of all, prefer UDP. Second of all, if you're going to use UDP, hold the packet size to 512 bytes. Are those good rules? In 1984, they were great rules because the internet was slower and it was noisier. But it's a great set of rules. And by the way, listen to me saying it was a great set of rules. Again, it's a pretty impressive network, 13 root servers serving several scacatillion machines. So it does the job pretty well. 512 is a basically good size. Make sense? So UDP 512, only use TCP if you have to. What does that mean? Now we're going to talk about some problems. Occasionally you'll have in your organization, and I'll bet it's some of you, how many of you are the firewall people? How many of you set the firewall rules? Come on, admit it, it's okay. All right. I'm going to pick on y'all just a little bit, okay? So I'm going to say, if you got some firewall Nimrod. Now, I'm not saying that all firewall administrators are firewall Nimrods. What happens is when you buy a firewall, Cisco or Smooth, I guess, was it Smoothwall? Cisco now owns it. Anyway, Cisco doesn't own Microsoft yet, but it's coming. So, wouldn't that be a fun one, huh? Anyway, so a lot of firewalls come with a bunch of default rules. You just push a button and you get them. And there are three DNS-based default rules. See if these sound familiar. First of all, if it claims it's a DNS packet but it's fragmented, drop it on the floor. That's a good rule. Why is it a good rule? 512 is pretty small. If you've got a fragmented packet, the chances are really good that some kind of hanky-panky is going on. It's a reasonable guess. 512 is pretty hard. I can't think of an MTU that's not going to be able to support a 512. UDP packet. Although I suppose as we get wireless, we may have smaller and smaller packets. If it claims it's a DNS packet, but it's TCP, block it. Is that a good rule? You know, it's an okay rule. I don't like it, but it's an okay rule, and why? Because over the internet, when you're looking stuff up, typically it fits in UDP. That's why it's there, and that's why people haven't noticed it and haven't turned it off. How about this one? If it claims it's a DNS UDP packet, but it's larger than 512 bytes, block it. Good rule? Hello? Good rule? Okay, let me say this again slowly. So the original RFCs say that UDP packet sizes are limited to 512 bytes. So rule says DNS, if it's a DNS UDP packet bigger than 512 bytes, something wrong. Drop it on the floor. Good rule? From what I've told you, yes. That's called foreshadowing. Good speakers use foreshadowing. Good speakers and me, okay? So, I was going to tell you about it but I can't wait. So, 2002, I think it was, 2002, 2003, I was on site helping some people do some Active Directory stuff, and as you know, Active Directory stuff involves a lot of DNS stuff. So I'm there Monday, and I'm changing the names of the companies because I don't ever talk about the people I work for. So we'll just say that this company had a B2B relationship with Yahoo. It's not Yahoo. And so Tuesday I come in, and there's new people in the room. I said, hi, who are you? They said, we're the DNS people. I said, I didn't do nothing. I didn't. The three excuses. I wasn't there, I don't know the guy, and I couldn't do it if I had. So, yeah. Right? Just hold to those three. Toss those babies out quick and run. A lot of situations can be diffused quickly. But you got to lose some weight and exercise a lot so you can run. Anyway. So, they said, no. They're not here about you. It's just that we got this terrible DNS problem, and one of them read your book and said, you know, would you come look at it? And I'm like, charged by the hour. Absolutely. Bring it on. You know? So, I mean, I do save money on gas, but I mean, that's all, you know, insurance. Anyway, so here's their problem. I'm greatly simplifying. They have to get to www.yahoo.com in order to do their business-to-business stuff, their extranet stuff, and they can't resolve Yahoo, sorry. They can't resolve www.yahoo.com anymore. They can go everywhere else on the internet, but not www.yahoo.com. And it worked yesterday. Okay? So what's the first thing you're going to say? Go on, you're the troubleshooter. Yeah, flush the cash. That's not what you're going to ask. If they say, what is it, and you're going for the big money here, what are you going to say? What changed? What did you change, right? That's the easy one. Makes you look at that. What did you do, right? And what's their answer?
Nothing.
And it's true. It was nothing. Wasn't their fault. A few years ago, our Yahoo briefly added a 14th DNS server. You see, the reason that there are 13 root DNS servers, I was kind of going through that quickly. I guess I haven't talked about that. Anyway, the reason that we have 13 root DNS servers is that the names and addresses of 13 DNS servers barely fits in 512 bytes. So the Yahoo guys, when they went to 14, they broke out of 512. That meant that DNS had to fall back from UDP to what? TCP. So far, so good. Everybody's following RFC, right? So far, so good. Everyone's following RFC, right? Good, good, good. Thank you. Don't want anybody falling asleep here. So what happened was, because it was bigger than UDP, it busted out to TCP, which is fine. But the firewall that they had, not Yahoo, but these people that were dealing with Yahoo, they had a firewall that had some dumb defaults, and one of the defaults was, if it's DNS and it's TCP, drop it on the floor. That was it. So that's an example of where this stuff will get you in some trouble. So the magic troubleshooting key, as I see it, is NetMon. So I want to talk to you about NetMon. I want to do, by the way, I have a whole bunch of slides about what I'm going to do. I'm going to be clicking a lot. Don't try to take notes. I'm going to flip through a whole bunch of slides when I'm done here about exactly what I'm doing to clean up NetMon. So, if I can just get that to work. There we go. So here's Network Monitor, NetMon 3.4. I don't know if there's a new one, to tell you the truth. NetMon starts out with a lot of marketing over here. And then there's the stuff over here. Now, this is important, and the reason this is important is that this is... is that these are the NICs that NetMon can trace. NetMon, in case I haven't said it, sorry. Network Monitor is something that will sniff on your network and capture every packet that goes by on the wire and allow you to inspect it on a byte-by-byte basis. NetMon essentially turns your network into glass. Seriously, this is the ultimate network troubleshooting tool. Feeling around in the dark with thick mittens with logs is often crazy. Embrace the NetMon. And then in this case, I don't want. Okay. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble here. Look at that. Anyway, what are we doing? There we are. I'm clicking the wrong thing. You know what? I know the problem. Problem is. That is good. Oh, good. That is working. Excellent. Okay, so now we can see that the. I get nervous when there's a lot of people in the room. Sorry. So. This is going to track stuff on both the wired network and the wireless network. And by the way, in 2012 and in desktop 8, it's not called local area connection anymore. It's called wired network connection. So now we have wireless network connection and wired network connection. I like that. I wish they'd just call it Ethernet, because then when I'm trying to type it, there's no spaces. But anyway, that's why I changed mine. You can now change the names of your NICs with group policy, too, by the way. So I'm going to uncheck, and maybe I want to just say don't bother with that. The other thing, too, that I'm going to say is you might want to just shut off IPv6 altogether. I'm not telling you to do that in general. I'm just saying for your test. I'm a big fan of IPv6. But if you do that, then there's going to be less chatter. Because we want to make this as simple as possible. Okay. And then let's just say, oh, there's another thing, too, I want to point out to you. If we look over here, there we go. We look over here. I'm doing this two-screen thing, which is upsetting Zoom it. It's not Mark's fault. Don't tell Mark that I blamed it on Mark. But then I'm on the alternate screen. Okay, you see that P mode thing? P mode is normally when you have a network card, the network card ignores all the traffic. Your network card hears everything. I realize I'm oversimplifying because of switches. But your network card hears everything. but it ignores everything except for the things that are directed to it. The hardware lets it do that. That's a matter of choice. If you're doing diagnostic stuff, there are alternate versions of many drivers called a promiscuous mode driver, which is not nearly as much fun as it sounds. The idea is that it will listen to everything, it will report on everything. There are times where that makes sense, there are not, it's not going to be that time. So you don't want to push that button. That when you see P mode, if you push that button, that would be a bad thing. Just because you get a lot more clutter. Netmon, the big problem with Netmon is the clutter. So I've already got a little capture here, and I'm going to show it to you. The way you're going to see it, if you've done this for the first time, you're going to get a screen that looks like that. Let me walk you kind of around it here. Over here are network conversations. That's going to be relevant in the TCP situation. DNS is largely what, though? UDP, which means that isn't going to help us much, and I could use that real estate. They say the most expensive real estate in the world is in downtown Tokyo. I would say it's on my desktop. And so when we're doing Netmon, I need to be able to, you know, clean some of that stuff up. So I'd get rid of that. And then over here, up top there, there's the display filter. That's fine. We're going to use that. Then there's the frame summary. That's going to give us a listing of all of the frames that we collected. Below that's the frame details. I like that. But then there's the hex details. I usually, you know, usually with the analysis I'm doing are not that high sphincter pressure that I need, you know, that level of information. So if I clean up some of the clutter. And by the way, Netmon, there are frame comments too. You can comment about a frame. And by the way, Netmon, if you clean up the frames and then start up Netmon again, it'll put them back at the way it was. And it'll do it again, but the third time, it believes you. I don't know why. You know, this could be a boring business. And you don't have to make stuff up in this business. That's great. Anyway, so we don't want to see everything. We just want to see the DNS-related traffic. We can do that by creating a filter. The filter says only show me the frames that are relevant to. You can actually get quite geeky about it. You could say, I only want to see the frames from a particular address. You could say, I only want to see the frames from port 53, and so on and so on and so on. Now, if you've ever done this, I mean, the bad news is that it's kind of like a programming language. It looks a little like a programming language, which is going to scare some people away, but don't be scared. I've used this tons of times, and very rarely have I written anything, and I'll tell you why. There's a cool thing that Microsoft did with Netmon. When you click there in the display filter, if you press F1, you get help. No, really, that's a surprise. And it's good help. There's like all kinds of examples of display filters and things. So it's actually terrific. And so in this case, all I've got to do is just create a filter that only shows me the DNS traffic. And the way to do that, this is real hard. I say DNS. And then click apply. And I got just the good stuff now. Okay? Now. I hope I'm doing okay for time. Well, we'll see. And I want to sort of walk you through the rest of this. So now we just have DNS traffic. And let's take a look at that. So what's it showing me? And I have cleaned up the columns a little bit as well. So the columns are showing me the source address and the destination address. And there's some descriptive information. Let's look at the addresses, though. My first query comes from 192.168. .1.something. What's that? That's the machine I just set up to do the query. It's coming back from 199.7.83.42. That's the first query. What do you think that's the IP address of? It's a root server address there. And by the way, look next to it. You see that DNS query? 0x alpha alpha 3 delta? Why are there two of them? Because if I'm the ISP DNS, I start out by saying, talk to me back with this ID. And I get the response with that ID. See the pairs of them? The first pair is I ask a question to the root responds. The second pair is I ask the question to whom? The .com servers, they respond. Is everybody with me on this? The next one is I talk to the Manasseh.com DNS server, which has the BigFirm information, and it responds. So we're starting to get some information already. We're tracking what's going on. And if we start looking at the frames, we get frame information in the bottom. And I'm going to take you down through the protocol for a little bit. First of all, is the frame. Inside the frame is the Ethernet information. We don't care much about that. Inside is the IPv4 information, which gives us a little bit of information. IPv4, you can't see it, but it says next protocol equals UDP. So it tells us UDP is coming next, so we can see that, though. What does the UDP thing say? UDP thing says we got a source port of such and such, destination port of such and such, and a length. Oh, that length's important. What's that length? 39. Are we good? Yes, we are. Good. I'm showing you something that worked. We're not going to see any problems with this. What I'm going to show you is I want you to understand how a healthy query works. So you can go home, make one of your own, print it out on a piece of paper, stick it in a thing that says in case of emergency, break glass or whatever. You know, more likely keep it on your hard drive. And then when you're looking at a failed query, and by the way, do these for your AD queries as well. It's super simple. It's super simple. That gives you a baseline. Then when things start to fail, what are you going to do? You're going to start comparing them line by line. Where did things start going off the rails? Then we look at the DNS part. And the DNS part is where things start to get interesting. If I open up the DNS packet, I'm going to throw a lot at you here. It'll be in the PowerPoints, but I'm going to throw a lot at you for just a moment here. What do we see? Well, first of all, we see the query ID. That's no big surprise. This is scrolled off that way, but it says query for a.bigfirm.com of type host. That's called an A lookup. That's an A record or an address record on class internet. There are some, not too many of us do hypernet lookups, right? It's query identifier again. And then there's a table of contents. Every DNS packet has one Q and three A's. Those are the sections. There's the question section, the answer section, the authority section, Netmon misspelled it, the authority section, and the additional section. Four sections. You have at least zero of any of the following, and you may have lots of them. You can have zero or more questions, zero or more answers, zero or more authority, and zero or more additionals. Are we okay so far? Every DNS query consists of this. And by the way, in DNS query conversation, every communication is a query. If I ask you a question, that's a query query. When you respond, it's a query response. But they're all queries. They're all formatted as if they're queries. They're all formatted looking very similar. In the first case, what have we got? We got the question. That's me asking the question. There are no answers. Why? If you knew the answer, dummy, why are you asking it, right? There's no name servers involved because I haven't got information yet, and an additional hasn't shown up either. Bust those open and take a look. There's not much to see. But down in the bottom, below the table of contents, again, this is showing me how it's actually laid out by the protocol. The question name is a.bigfirm.com, and then the question type. So that's straightforward. I hope it's straightforward. Talk to me if not. Let's go to the response. That's more interesting, I think. In the response, what have we got? We've got a question count of what? One. Answer count of zero. An authority count of 13 and an additional count of 14. What is that? Well, first of all, why is there a question? I asked the root server a question. Is it asking me a question back? Is its question, are you out of your mind asking me to do this? That would be a reasonable question. No, what happens is whenever a DNS server answers a question, it always packages back the question. Remember in like fourth grade when you had to take tests that involved writing stuff on a piece of paper or homework? You had to use a complete sentence. Like if the question is, what year was George Washington born? You can't just write 1731. You have to say, George Washington was born in 1731. DNS paid attention in fourth grade. So DNS always responds with the question that it's asking, that it's answering, or trying to answer, or not answering in this case. Let's go take a look at what some of those other things look like. These are authority records. I got an authority record, .com on NS. What is this? Remember I said that the root server says, talk to the hand, I'm not doing your work for you, go talk to the .com servers. Did you see an answer? How many answer sections were there up top in the table of contents? How many answers, not authorities, not additionals? None, zero. This is the way DNS says, talk to the hand. It's a response, there's no answer. But there's additionals and authoritatives. Authorities are going to be, these are the DNS servers to go to get this question answered. I'm not going to answer it for you. And now we're seeing the names of those. And those are the authority records, one by one. Those are the names of the .com DNS servers. Is this making sense? Is everybody okay? Let's look below that and see what the additional records are. So the additional records, down this way, this is DNS's way of saying, I know what your next question is going to be. I've told you that there's a server called a.gtld-servers.net, but that doesn't help. What IP address does it have? And so what we see here, how many com DNS servers are there? 13. How many additional records should we need? 13. And you see there's an address for each one of them. Does that make sense? But wait a minute, there weren't 13, there's 14. Why is there, it's only 13 servers, why is there 14 addresses? Look at the bottom. Anybody recognize that thing down there? What, you never been to my IPv6 talk? When you start, the first time I started up Vista, I did an IP config and like this IPv6 stuff. I'm like, I don't know what this stuff is, but there's a lot of colons in there, and I know what comes out of colons, you know? So, but anyway. I've learned to love the V6, though, and you will learn to love the V6. I keep bugging my ISP for my block of addresses because I want to put that. I want to be, you know, World Internet Day, June 6th of next year. I want a V6. I do this just for fun. Every couple of months, I call up my ISP, and I say, can I get a block of IPv6 addresses since we're out of IPv4? And the first level's like, I have no idea, and just passes me up to the second level, and the second level says, huh? And then the third level, they have a random answer generator, apparently, at the ISP. I love the one I got about a year ago. Mr. Manassi, you just don't understand. IPv6 is only used by the military. Don't you love when you ask technical questions of people and you realize that you know way more than they do about what they're supposed to? Yeah, okay. There's moments like that you want to say, are there any big people there, son? Can I talk to your daddy? I did this query a while back. I checked last night. Now it's up to 10. So the 13 root servers, 10 of them have IPv6 addresses. Okay. All right. So from there, if I continue, what's going to happen? Well, now the next thing, I mean, at this point, it's kind of redundant. Because now what's going to happen is we're going to have a query over to the .com servers. What do we see? What's the question count? One question. How many additionals? How many authorities? How many? They're all zero. Question's going to come back. The answer's going to come back from DNS. And DNS this time is going to point to my web server, which is down a little ways. And finally, we'll get the query. Is that making sense? The only thing you haven't seen yet is an answer. And the answer comes from my DNS server. Look at that top level field. Question count of 1, answer count of what? All right, now I can tell you what's special about a.bigfirm.com. a.bigfirm.com has 50 A records associated with it. It'll take 850 bytes to answer the question. What's that mean? It means you can use it as a troubleshooting tool. You can find out if you have firewall Nimrods. It's real simple. I'm going to show you a tool where you can say, look that up, and I'm demanding you use UDP. So stay tuned. We'll see how to do that. There's a hand question over there, real quick. As more of the servers get IPv6 addresses, isn't that going to get bigger than 512 bytes? I'm glad you asked that question, sir. It's good to have another shill in the audience, but you're about 10 slides too early. The answer is eDNS. Stay tuned. So, are we good with Netmon? Anybody got a question on Netmon? Was that bad? Have I convinced those of you who are on the fence? Have I convinced anyone to give it a try? Please, talk to me if I... Okay, good. Again, here's your approach. Do a regular query. Maybe from your workstation to your DCs closer to home, but I mean, a query is a query. Bust it out, make sure that it all makes sense. Drop me an email if it doesn't. This is easy stuff. Honest to God. Yes, sir. Is there a significant functionality difference between this and Wireshark? No, Wireshark does the same stuff. It's just I happen to know Netmon. I fear Laura. I would not say bad things about Wireshark. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, Laura Chappell is a very good friend of mine. She's the smartest person in the world about packets and protocols and stuff like that. Normally, I'm frightened to be doing a packet talk when I'm in the same room, building as Laura. But, I mean, as the packet queen, she's a benevolent queen. And so... And apparently not with us this time. I don't know why. So. Okay. I'm going to run you through some slides super quickly because all they do is they just re-say what I just said. So what do we got here? Create an R2 system, add the DNS role, point it to itself for DNS for the testing purposes. I say simplify the NIC list by getting rid of V6, not forever, just for this test. Set up network monitor. It looks like that. We talked about how to clean it up. Get rid of the, select the NICs that you want. Don't worry about promiscuous mode. Clean up the windows. If you're doing something complicated, it can be hard to figure out when what you're trying to do got started and when it ended. A trick I learned, I'd like to tell you it's my idea. It's not. A friend of mine came up with it, and you know her. She's doing some neat workshops on MDT this week. Anyway, the idea is if you want to do something, don't type the one command. Type three commands. Do a ping to some address, do the command you want to do, and then the ping again. The value of those pings is what? They act like parentheses. They act like bookends. Oh, I know that after this I don't care, and I know that before this I don't care. Make sense? Great way to kind of wrap around. Yeah. Terrific stuff. Build a DNS-only filter. I told you how to build the filter, and you get just the good stuff here. I want to mention about root servers. There really aren't just 13 of them. The reason that we report 13 is that that's what fits in 512. It actually is an IP load balancing system that stands in front of 315 root servers. So as of last night, it was 315. Might be more. I don't know. So, and if you don't believe me, look it up at www.root-servers.org. So here, once again, this is just a step-by-step. We talked about question-answer authority. There's a close-up from the original query. There was a question, no answers. No authority, no additionals. Questions on that? We already did it, but I'm happy to take any questions. And if I can't see you in darkness, shout out. So. This is the response. There's our authority records, and there's the additional records starting up. We then get a response. We are now doing some questions to the .com server. The answer comes back, go talk to web2.manasseh.com. Now that the server knows where to find a.bigfrim.com, it queries that DNS server. Use that as a reference. Here's another example. How many of you have ever had a problem with dynamic DNS registration, where dynamic DNS registration was giving you some trouble? This is the blueprint. This is what you're going to see. Do a dynamic DNS registration. And by the way, I forgot to mention this. It's in the PowerPoint. Before you do these things, always do ipconfig/flushdns. You probably found that one out the hard way. One thing that drives me crazy about the DNS client, as I'm sure you know, is that if you try to resolve some name and it fails, it doesn't even bother trying for another 5 minutes. So you're there, and you think you got yourself hooked up to www.bigfrim.com. You realize your mistake. You fix it. You try to go to www.bigfrim.com, and it fails anyway because it says, well, it didn't work 10 seconds ago, Sonny. It's not going to work now. Yes, it is because I fixed it. So how many of you learned before you do any kind of DNS stuff? I'm doing a lot of them. I've got, in up arrow, I've got ipconfig/flushdns. And oft times you're going to flush the cache as well. So that's another example. Get a working one. Keep it where you can get a hold of it. All right? So now I want to talk to you about extensions to DNS, eDNS. You probably noticed by now that DNS needs a bit of modernization. So 99... we got something called extensions to DNS. That's RFC 2671. 1999 was interesting. 1998 was more interesting because 1998 was the year that we had RFC 1998. That only happened once. I don't get out much. These things excite me. So, idea here. The original DNS only had enough space for 7 flags in the header. Only enough space for 7 flags in the header. We've used up 6. If two people have a good idea, we're in trouble. And UDP at 512, you know, that made sense when we had steam-driven routers. You know. But now that we have solar-powered routers, it's a whole lot faster. You know. Anyway, so here's the way eDNS works. You wouldn't want to set something up with eDNS. You wouldn't want to set up a DNS, new DNS, that would break the old ones. So what happens is this. If I'm eDNS smart, and I want to ask you a question, I want to say to you, do you know eDNS? But there really isn't a way in DNS to say, do you know something? Because DNS doesn't know how to say, huh? And so the trick is this. The way that I get eDNS going is I say, hey, I've got a query. I'm going to query for a.bigfirm.com, type A. And by the way, I know eDNS. I can take a 4,000-byte UDP packet. That's what I say. It's a negotiation. When we talk about network negotiations, again, who starts the conversation? Client. It's really the client that always runs the negotiation. So the client says, and by the way, so the client says, here's my question, and I talk eDNS, I can do a packet this big. How do I do that? I do that by creating a new record. You know those DNS records we've used for years? The MX record, the SOA record, the A record, TXT record, all those things? What happens under RFC, what happens if you're a DNS server and I ask you to look up the XYZ record from Anasty.com? Don't look it up. There's no XYZ record. Under the rules, a DNS server does not say, huh? DNS server just does the Miss Manners thing of, I'll just make believe you didn't say that. It's a specific rule. If you're a DNS server and you get asked for a record that you don't recognize, there's no error message you emit. You just say, so when I'm asking for a.bigfirm.com, it's a record of type what? A. And I also say, by the way, I've got an opt record for you. There's no such thing as, well, there is kind of in the RFC. But opt doesn't mean anything. So you're a server, I'm a server. I say, would you look up a.bigfirm.com for me? And by the way, opt 4000. If you're DNS dumb, if you're eDNS dumb, what do? You look up the A record. And you send it back in a UDP packet, how big? 512. Now, it ain't going to fit, but that's a problem we'll deal with in a minute. If you are eDNS smart, and I say, look up a.bigfirm.com, opt 4000. You'd come back and say, here's the answer, in a monster UDP packet, and by the way, I can't do more than 1280. We've now done the negotiation. We're not going to break any DNS servers. I want you to get that. Will we ever break a DNS server like this? Okay, we agree. Now I have a story to tell you. So I created a.bigfirm.com. It's not going to fit. My DNS server uses eDNS. So if you talk to my DNS server and you say opt, it's going to say, fine, I'm going to send you 850 bytes all in one packet. What if I turn eDNS off on my server? My server is going to say it's going to be TCP. We're going to have to fall back. That works fine. Now, you will find a lot of blogs out there that say that Microsoft did a terrible thing when R2 came out because they came out with this eDNS thing. And boy, now that I've got this stupid R2 DNS server, I can't get to Yahoo and I can't get to Amazon. And even those Microsoft guys were so dumb that they didn't turn eDNS on their servers. This is ignorance writ large. Let me explain it to you. So here's what a packet looks like. That's what the opt query looks like. See that right there? So I'm asking the question, a.bigfirm.com, and I'm saying opt. So I'm saying my largest payload size is 4,000. Everybody see that okay? What's the response look like? The response comes back, and notice that the response says, I got your data for you right here. The length is 850. Uh-oh. But look at the bottom. The bottom is everything was packaged in that 850-byte packet, and there's an opt. And that means, here's your data, it's bigger than 512, we stuck it in a big packet, but you said you could handle it, and by the way, if you want to opt back to me, I can't handle more than 1280. Make sense? Questions? All right. I got questions. How does it break out? Oh, by the way, what happens if we do go to a stupid DNS server? An undereducated, a DNS server that's been left behind. It's a protocol that's been around for 12 years. So, I mean, virtually, I looked hard. The only DNS server I could find, believe it or not, that didn't do eDNS was Google's. Maybe it's because they do so much traffic that they've got the most stripped down, basic, I don't know. And that may have changed, by the way. Anyway, look what happens. If we talk with a non-DNS server, remember that? We go TCP and then DNS over TCP. So it's going to say we're going to have to do this in a couple of packets. Here's where we get in trouble, friends. So you want to look up a.bigfrom.com. You have a DNS server that is eDNS aware. You send a message to my DNS server. My DNS server says, I got your answer for you, but it's going to involve some UDP. And you have no problem with that. Packages up a UDP packet of 850 bytes, shoots it across the network. Has anyone violated a protocol yet? No, exactly. But you got firewall nimrods. You got a firewall, you have a firewall where someone just flipped on the defaults. And the default said, incoming UDP larger than 512, we're under attack, raise the shields. Drop the packet on the floor. Okay? Why do you care? Mark, why are you telling me about this edge condition? Why do you think Microsoft put eDNS in every version of server from 2003 on? Have you ever looked at the kind of lookup that happens when you do an SRV lookup on a network of any size at all? How many of you have more than 13 domain controllers?
Ooh.
Oh, and guess what? SRV records are way bigger than A records, which means how many of you have more than 4 domain controllers? More than 4. That's double ooh. Yeah. That means you're falling back to TCP all the time on one of the busiest servers in your network. You want eDNS more than anybody else on the planet. So you want to make sure this works. You with me? If you go to a lot of blogs, they'll say, turn that off, and that's the command. Don't do that. DNS command slash config enable eDNS probes 0. Set it to 1. How many of you still have 2008 and 2003 based DNS servers? Type that command with a 1. You will immediately improve the performance of your DNS servers within your intranet. Make sense? Why do we need it? We need bigger UDP, and we absolutely have to have it for DNSSEC. I have about 3 minutes, and I just want to show you a couple things. When I first got involved with DNS, long, long time ago, that was back in the days when my ISP only spoke Unix. And when I tried to explain what I was doing, they'd say, oh, Windows, ha ha, go away. You know, so we only send you UDP. You can't handle TCP. You know. So. And this thing called NS Lookup. NS Lookup is kind of stupid. One of the things NS Lookup does is that if you have two DNS servers, if you've got a preferred and an alternate, it will only test the preferred. It doesn't fall back to the alternate, which freaks people out a lot. I've gotten emails on that. I had heard that there was this great Unix tool called DIG, which was going to be in Server 2003, and then I heard it was going to be in Server 2008, and then I heard it was going to be in 2008 R2, and it never is. Turns out, though, that if you get Bind, which is that free, not just Unix, but Windows DNS server, it's the one used by most DNS servers on the planet, if you download it, you can go to www.isc.org/downloads, get the latest version of Bind. Open those files up. By the way, you can run this on anything. If you want to make your XP computer into a DNS server with Bind, you can do that. Grab all of the DLLs, anything that starts with DIG, and the VC redist x86.exe thing, that too. Put that on the path. You don't have to install anything. I'm just lazy. I put it in System 32. You can now just type DIG, and it'll work. Want to see some DIG? I say, friends, you want to see some DIG? Yeah. I love DIG for a few reasons. So if I say something like dig www.manasseh.com, that will give me a straightforward A lookup. And it says, sorry, that didn't turn out to be an A pal. It actually turned out to be a CNAME record. So in this case, I will grant you that there's not a lot more information than NS lookup gives you, but maybe there is. Hang on. How's it formatted? Question section, answer section. That's starting to sound look a little more familiar. Was that easier than Netmon? I say, friends, was that easier than Netmon? Netmon shows you all the intermediate stuff. Let's be clear. There's a place for Netmon as well. Sing it, brother. So, flag information, query status, this is truer. This is closer to the actual packet. I know it's 6. Can you give me 2-3 minutes, please, and then I'll be done? Let me show you some other things you do with it. That's going to give you an A record. If I wanted to see, for example, can you guys see this in the cheap seats? Anybody in the back who can't hear, raise your hand. Right. Consultants learn to ask the right questions. You get the right answers. So, if I say dig Manasseh.com plus and I say MX, it'll go get the MX records. That's kind of cool. Let me show you the sexy one. So if I say dig a.bigfirm.com, if I say dig a.bigfirm.com, I can test the firewall here. It's a conference center. You think the Orlando guys know? How many of you think that the Orlando Conference Center has a good firewall? Well, look at that. Look at that. Doubting Thomases and Thomasinas. Wow. Here's how we're going to do it. There's a switch that we can use. It's really pretty neat. If I want to say I'm forcing you to use TCP, I can say plus VC, virtual circuit. It worked. It's always going to work. TCP always works. And the interesting one is no VC. If you do no VC, you are forcing DIG to try to do UDP. My server's fine with it. If it doesn't come back right, let's see what happens. So, the correct keyboard. Truncated, retrying in TCP mode. Oh, poor Orlando Center. There are at least 300 consultants who could help them now. I didn't know that was going to happen. I was just praying. So that's just the basics. I have a newsletter on this as well. It's on my site. You can get it to do traces for you. You can tell it to not recurse. You can test DNSSEC. A lot of cool stuff. That's a nice dig output. Question, answer, authority, additional setting. Very nice. That's the netmon frame for comparison. And then the one other tool I want to mention is DNS lint. Grab that from Microsoft.com/downloads. It's a very nice sanity checker about your DNS zone. DC Diag has got a nice test that will test. It does AD-related tests. Be careful. There's a really cool option. /E is for enterprise. That says test this on every single DNS server in your enterprise at the same time. Don't run that one on a weekday. So that could be an RGE, right? RGE, resume generating event. So some other resources as well. I said 2 minutes. It's 4. Thanks a lot for coming. For those of you who are like, you know, let me talk. Give me a minute. I will release you to the beer in a moment. I will release you. Anyway, please don't forget the evaluations. They're really, 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 really important. I got to come back because, you know, folks liked it last time. I'm doing a cloud talk. It's sort of my take on what's good and bad about clouds. And I get yelled at because I don't say everything about the cloud is wonderful. I say a lot of good things about the cloud, but I say some things that you got to think about that you might want to join me at. I'm at help@manasseh.com. I'm happy to answer questions on that. Other than that, thank you very much. Remember to use this knowledge for good and not for evil. See you Wednesday. Thank you.